he's going back to the...
Okay. So at the in Parshas Vayishlach we have the story of Dina, who was abducted by Shechem, and the Rambam tells us in Source 1, he's talking about the Dinim of Bnei Noach. He says, Ketzad mitzuvin hein al adinim. How are Bnei Noach, what does that mean, that they're responsible? One of the seven mitzvahs Bnei Noach is that they have to uphold law. So what does that mean? That Bnei Noach have a responsibility. That's what Dina means, that they have to set up a court system to judge the other six mitzvahs of Bnei Noach. And anyone who violates the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach has to be killed. And this is why the people of Shechem were killed by Shimon and Levi. Shechem stole, meaning he stole Dina. They saw and they didn't judge. So the Rambam's explanation of why they killed the city of Shechem is because they didn't set up a court system to judge the other six mitzvahs Bnei Noach, and that's the Rambam's explanation of that parsha. So the Ramban says, "Ein dvar halal nechon v'enesh im kein ha'yakov v'inu chayav lios kodem." So first of all, if it was true, Yaakov would have been at the forefront of this whole thing, and he wasn't. He was upset, and he was upset at Shimon and Levi for doing this. And then he says, "Va'adati hadinim Shimon levnei Noach b'shev mitzvah shalom ein lahoshiv dayan b'chol plak levad." It's not just to set up dayanim in each city to judge the six mitzvahs. Aval tivosim b'dine geneva v'onav oshek uschar sachir b'dine hashomer v'onus mufate. Meaning the mitzvah of dinim is not just to set up a court system to judge the other six mitzvahs, but it's to set up a whole system of justice to deal with the plethora of cases. Any society is going to have to deal with things that are beyond the six mitzvahs of Bnei Noach. So it's not just the Rambam's narrow explanation of what the mitzvah of Dinim is, but it's this more expansive system of law that the Ramban is mentioning. Now the Ramban does not go as far as the Rama, which I'm going to get to in a minute. The Ramban seemingly might be open to a system of law like our American law, which has not only the Dinim of Geneva, but all the other laws that are applicable to torts and everything else, but it doesn't follow Choshen Mishpat. It just is a set of laws. Rashi, if you look in Source 3, when he talks about Dina de Malchus Dina, so he says that the reason why certain things are done in a court system are kosher, he says, "Aval adinim." This is the fourth to last line. "Aval adinim in tzav Bnei Noach," meaning when it comes to law, Bnei Noach are in tzav on dinim, that they have to keep a system of justice. So that's why if you have a document, there's nothing in the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach that if I borrow money from somebody else and doesn't have signatures, that it's not a good document. But if the local system is set up that way, that you need signatures in order to prove something, or witness, whatever, so that becomes Dina de Malchus Adina. Why? Because Bnei Noach are in Tzitavu al Adina, because Bnei Noach have to keep a system of laws. Okay, so here's where the Ramah comes in, and this is where we get to intellectual property. So the Ramah says the following. The Ramah is discussing a case where the Maram of Padua, who happened to be a cousin of the Ramah, so this is right after, the Ramah lived in the 16th century, this is right after the printing press came about, so these shailas naturally came up at this time first. So he commissioned the printing of a Rambam, meaning the Mishnah Torah, all set to go, and then a non-Jewish person at the same time, or right after, decided to print the Rambam, kind of stepping on the Maran Padua's toes. So the Ramah starts off his tshuva about copyright by saying the following, that you might think that Bnei Noach It's not one of the Shev Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, not the, you know, the FBI warning at the beginning of whatever. That's not one of the Shev Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. So what are we getting involved with this for? Meaning, let this guy do what he did. If he didn't do anything illegal, it should be fine. But no, the mitzvah of dinim means, the Ramah says, that they have to follow the dinim based on our Chosh and Mishpat, that they have to follow the same laws that we do, meaning it's not just gezel, it's not just stealing, but it's the whole thing that they have to keep. And therefore, and he uses that as an introduction to discussing what he discusses in terms of what the halacha would be. But his point is that when it comes to matters of monetary law, you don't distinguish between Jews and non-Jews. Everyone has the same set of laws. So what is the basis for intellectual property or copyright in halacha? So we have a few different approaches, which I'm going to run through, and maybe some of the practical applications in the next 9 minutes. So one is that there is this concept of stealing something that's not tangible. Meaning you might say, well, I wrote a book. What's the big deal if somebody else comes and just takes it and copies it, whether it's the same layout or not, but what's the difference? So the Gemara talks about whether a non-Jew is allowed to learn Torah. Gemara says, "Ovik chamish osik b'Torah chayav misa." And if a non-Jew learns Torah, he's chayav misa, because it says, "Torah tziva lanu Moshe marasha lanu marasha v'lo lehem marasha." Torah tziva lanu Moshe, right? Hashem gave the Torah to us and not to them. So the Machane Chayim, who's grandson or great grandson of some sofer, Rechaim Sofer, I don't think he's a grandson, but it's the same last name. So he says that intellect, you see here that you can steal something that's not tangible, right? Torah is not tangible, and the fact that the Torah belongs to us, and if a non-Jew learns it, it's considered a form of, as the Gemara says, it's a possibility, at least, that it's part of the mitzvah of Gezel. So you see that you could steal intangible items. And the Maram Shik disagrees. The Maram Shik thinks that you cannot steal... you can't steal something that's not tangible, and he goes on to explain how to read the Gemara. Fine. So that's possibility one, that just things that are not tangible could still be stolen. You see this as well with... the Gemara talks about Bor b'shus haram. You dig a pit in the middle of public road, and then somebody trips, or something gets damaged in the pit. So you don't own the pit, but the Gemara says that even though you don't own it, it can be as if you did own it. The Torah made it as if you owned it. So to here, you can have something that even though you can't physically say, I own this, but the Torah says that it's yours. That's how the Rav Shimon Shkup gives intellectual property as an example of something that doesn't seem like you could own it, but you could own it. And then Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson says, without that, it's just a svara, that if somebody creates something, they own it. You create, even if it's not tangible, it's yours, and nobody else can take it from you. So that's one way of looking at it, that, you know, maybe from a strictly, you know, if you look at things having to be tangible, then maybe you can't steal something that doesn't exist. So we see a number of sources that you can steal something that even if it doesn't physically exist. There's another reason why you might have to, why you might not be able to violate copyright. And this is a complicated discussion. You have the sources here about benefiting from something. Somebody provides benefit for you, and you are interested in paying for it. So the Gemara in Mishnah in Source 11, the Gemara in Source 12 seems to indicate that you have to pay for hana, for benefit that you derive from something which you would have paid for if you didn't have the ability to just take it for free. Now, what complicates this is that the Gemara in the same discussion talks about zeneh nevezel chaser. What if the other person doesn't really lose out? Meaning, I created something, by you benefiting from it, I don't really lose anything. I lost maybe my parnasa from it, but I didn't really lose anything tangible. So do we say zen and
opportunity cost?
What?
Opportunity cost.
Right, opportunity cost. But here, there's nothing physical that's being lost. Right. So, well, it's more than opportunity cost. Meaning, I had that opportunity to sell the item to you. So sometimes we say kofen al midas stone. So what's an example? A guy has a property that he can't rent out, and somebody squats on the property, and now he wants to charge rent. So if he was able to rent it out, so fine. So then the squatter has to pay. But if there was no way he was able to rent this out anyway, so and he wasn't planning on renting it out, and somebody just went in there and lived in there, so he can't charge rent. That's kofen al midas stone. So how far do you go with this? So Rabbeinu Tam, I'm going to just bottom line this. The Baal Yatosa seemed to say that that's only b'dievet, meaning the guy didn't ask permission. He squatted in the apartment, and he didn't ask. And now you want to charge him, you can't charge him, because you didn't really lose any money. But l'chachila, he's not allowed to go squat in there on his own. He can't. You can't say, because it's midas stone to charge, that I, l'chachila, can go ahead and do this. That's what Tulsa says. So the Nod Behuda brings this up in the context of copyright. He discusses a case. You know, in the old days, they had printing plates. So you made this whole printing plate. You print the sefer off the, you know, it was like a stamper, or however it worked. Okay, so this printer made the printing plates, and he did a run for the person who was commissioning the printing plates. And now, you know, he sold his books. Now the printer says, hey, I got these printing plates, let me do another run of the same thing. So the original person said, what do you mean? It was my work that went into making sure that the printing plates were all fine. And the printer said, well, you know, I was going to destroy them anyway, so why can't I just use them to print my own sefer? So the Nod Yehuda employs this tosis here and says, you can't just come along and say lechachila that I want to be, right, what are you losing out anyway? Because each party has a claim, meaning I could have made more money. So you can't impose that lechachila. Melchiel Tannenbaum, the different Melchiel, has the opposite conclusion in a different case involving somebody who took out a license to sell a certain type of medicine. He got FDA approval, so to say, and now somebody wants to sell the same drug without going through the whole process. So he says the opposite. He says, in the case of Tulsus, there's at least wear and tear on the apartment. So you could say, I don't want you living in my apartment because you're going to get the walls dirty. Something's going to happen. So l'chachila, I could stop you from squatting in the apartment. But in a case where there's no loss whatsoever, so then you can't, you can actually force somebody into the situation. Rav Moshe Feinstein, talking specifically about copying tapes, so he says, no way. That we don't say zen enev zelachasa, you can't impose on the person who produced it and say, well, you're not losing anyway, so I'm going to copy it. It's his property, and that's it. Going back to the Ramah has a different svara, which with this will end. The Ramah says that yored l'tochum nosa shechaveru, if you go and steal somebody's parnasa, so that's prohibited if it's bori hazeka, if there's clear loss to the person who is trampled upon, so to say. So if two people are going into competition and they both live in the cities, there's a long discussion in the Gemara about that. That we could say is okay. That's not bori hazeka. It's not clear that one person is going to lose immediately from the other person opening up. But if there's a clear loss, so the Ramah says that that the Ramah and Padua was correct in trying to stop this other person from printing the same thing that he just printed, and therefore he cannot do it. So that's and obviously the Ramah had sway in that particular case. If he tells people you can't buy the Rambam from Ploni, so they're going to buy it from the Maran Padua.
Halach l'maisa, being a photocopy of the Tshuva Sigras Moshe or anything else?
So if you follow the approach that everything's based on benefits, so let's say I wanted to give out, and I was going to follow, you know, it says you can't copy this and this, so I'd have to give out the whole Ramban, and the whole Gemara Gittin, and the whole Tshuva Sarama, and I'll purchase a copy for each of you for this year, and I'll tell you to. So that would never happen, meaning I don't have the budget for that. You know, no one would ever pay money. A lot of these sources are not copyrighted, but even if they were, no one is ever going to do that. So Moshe's not losing, especially like if you have a copy of Igros Moshe at home, I'm not going to buy you a copy just so you can read it in the shir. So nobody's losing out from that. So that's what American law calls fair use. So it has a place in halacha. There's no way that I was going to pay money for it. So he's not losing from that.